It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We are looking at a crisis, not only of confidence, but potentially a constitutional crisis.
The constitutional crisis happens when you've got the president who has been overreaching.
We're clearly in a constitutional crisis, one that the Trump administration have created.
It really is a constitutional crisis.
This administration wants to have a constitutional crisis.
We've talked for a long time about approaching a constitutional crisis. We are now in it.
Do you agree with Congressman Nadler, Chairman Nadler, that we're in a constitutional crisis?
We are.
So there you go. That's what's on the minds of the Democrats, a constitutional crisis, which you could argue they have created. Sandy Rios, back with you. Yes, back with you after 10 days in Scotland. And I'm going to tell you about that in a second. But I want to first of all thank Walker Wildman for filling in for me and also J. Christian Adams. I know you were in good hands. And can you believe all the news that happened while I was gone? So many things, whether it's Bob Mueller being pursued for testimony by the Democrats in the House. We also have Don Trump Jr. Being subpoenaed to testify before the Senate committee, which is led, of course, by Richard Burr, who is a Republican. And of course, Don Jr. is supposed to be, he's already testified for hours about the Trump Tower meeting. The Mueller report has already come out declaring that there was nothing to that, including that meeting. And yet it's just, some things never change. You would have thought that maybe the left might have gotten the hint. They might have been so embarrassed by the truth that's coming flooding out that they would have been quiet or they would have repented, they would have changed, but they're just digging their heels in. It seems very apparent to me, but it is frightening how wide-eyed. It's like the Adam Schiff wild-eyed. It's like they're getting crazier by the minute. And I'm not sure how this is going to end. I really don't. And so we're going to talk about that. As you know, we will. We'll be talking about that a lot. James Comey, I watched part of interviews that he did while I was gone. It was just appalling. The former FBI director turning into this very odd creature. We thought he was a man we could respect. We kind of thought that, didn't we? We're finding out that he's another wide-eyed. You can't trust what he says. It's very disconcerting. And on the plane, I read at great length a book about, in part, was tracking the backgrounds of James Comey, of James Clapper, and other people who've been involved in this, and it's pretty frightening. And I will get into that, not today, but I will get into that too. James Comey's not the man we thought he was. I can tell you that based on my reading. And so we're going to be talking about all of that and watching it unfold. You know we will. I want to also say that there is a really pressing issue this week is the Equality Act. And I know that I've discussed it at great length before I left. It's been in the works for a long time. This is kind of like the dream list. This is like the Green New Deal introduced by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. This is the wonderful, fabulous plan for your lives that the left has in regard to sexuality. And it is a nightmare. I think probably it's best described by the Republican Party platform. That's how far back this goes. The platform, of course, was at the last convention when President Trump was nominated. They always redo or rewrite the platform each of those years. And this is what it said about the Equality Act. That same provision of law, Title IX, is now being used by bureaucrats and by the current president of the United States, which was at the time Obama, to impose a social and cultural revolution upon the American people by wrongly redefining sex discrimination to include sexual orientation or other categories. Their agenda has nothing to do with individual rights. It has everything to do with power. They are determined to reshape our schools and our entire society to fit the mold of an ideology alien to America's history and traditions. Their edict to the states concerning restrooms, locker rooms, and other facilities is at once illegal, dangerous, and ignores privacy issues. We salute the several states which have filed suit against it. Well, this bill, I just came into my inbox before the show started moments ago, that the House is set to vote on this. It's probably going to be voted on Thursday. So this is what I think you'll want to do. It's not like an order from me. This is what I think the natural inclination. If you could talk to me, you'd say, what can I do? What can I do? Well, this is what you can do. Go to our AFAaction.net website, AFAaction.net. And you'll see at the very top, you'll see the Equality Act. It's called H.R. 5. And you will see how you can contact your congressman to let them know that you are not down with this. And they better not vote for it. And I have it on good authority that lots of Republicans are wavering on this. Many of you are the only conservatives on this issue are Republicans. That's why I single them out. And so we can't let that happen. We can't let that happen. They have to know there will be consequences if they vote for a bill like this. And so go to AFAaction.net, AFAaction.net, and you'll see how you can contact your congressman or representative. If you don't want to do that, you can call them straight out. Call their, and I suggest always their home office. Don't call them in Washington. Call them at home where their staff there knows you. They live in your state, and they respond to you. And respectfully, but powerfully and strongly, tell them this is not acceptable. And there's lots of information if you want better words and more description. I will talk about it at great length tomorrow. But today I just want you to know this is a problem, and we need to get right at stopping this in every way we possibly can. I want to just take just a minute. I always feel, you know, I don't talk a lot about, you know this, I talk about serious issues and I give you as much as I can in an hour, but I have been gone. And I think in due course, it is, you are very much my family. You listen every day. And even though I don't talk to you much about my family, you know a little bit about it. And so it seems to me fitting that I would tell you a few things about my time. My son is a PhD student at St. Andrews in St. Andrews, Scotland. He was a pastor for many years. He, of course, has his divinity degree, but he doesn't have his PhD, and that's what he's working on. And he has four children, so, and they're little. You know, the youngest is 18 months, the oldest is 10, and my goal in going, of course, is to, I need to be with my grandchildren. I have to, it's my duty and my joy to be an influence on my children, my son and his wife and their family. And so I faithfully try to go as often as I can. Of course, it's not, like I said, it's not a duty, it's a joy. But I take my role as their grandmother very seriously. And I want to tell you a couple of things that happened, which were just such a blessing to me. My granddaughter, Kate, is 7 years old, and we did a lot of playing, all of us. I played with all of them. I took each of them out individually. We had lunch, ice cream, all kinds of things. We had prayer every night, and we sang at the table the doxology. The kids love singing that. And so one day, Kate and I were musing about, and she told me she'd been reading her Bible. I bought her a beautiful, her and the oldest, Moses, who's 10, these really nice Bibles, and they're great readers. And Kate said, Grandma, I've been reading Matthew. I said, well, Kate, that's kind of a tough book. How are you coming with that? And so she's just, it's very funny to hear her talk. And I said, well, she loves princesses. She loves dresses that twirl. You know, she loves bling and all of these things. And we took her to Disney World, and she loved the princesses there. And so I said, Katesy, do you want to hear a story about a real queen, a really beautiful, who really lived, somebody that really was a princess and then a queen? Yes, I'd love that. And so we sat down and we read the Book of Esther. I read it to her, the entire book, and she sat and listened, and we interacted back and forth and back and forth. And at one point she said to me, you know, Grandma, I have been thinking that it is not enough. We have to be pretty, not just on the outside, but on the inside. And I think as you get older, that pretty on the inside shows up on the outside. I said, Kate, yeah, that's right, sweetheart. And then we got to the part where Esther said, and if I die, I die, because she was willing to do anything to serve God. There was just, I felt the Holy Spirit in that room with my 7-year-old granddaughter, and we both cried. That was the kind of thing that God allowed me to do when I was in Scotland. And then one other story, because, yeah, I'm proud of my son, of course. I'm proud of my grandkids, but I am more concerned for their character and their love of God than anything else. So I know my son is, he's a smart kid, and he writes a lot of books, and he has really great thoughts. But imagine my joy when a girl, they have what they call pub church. So we went to a pub, and some 30 students, and some of them were undergrad students, and some of them were PhD students. Some were students that my son has been working with as he's been tutoring them and doing various things. And one girl sat next to me, and she was getting her PhD in hummingbirds. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Her PhD in hummingbirds. And she said to me, you know, my father's an atheist, and he's a scientist. And I always thought that you could not believe in God and science, that you had to choose. And then I heard Jeremy, my son, Jeremy, I heard Jeremy preach on the birth of Jesus. And he talked about the zygote and the science of it all, of the birth and the miracle of it. And she said, I had never heard anyone talk like that about Jesus. And she said, it was at that moment, she said, that was a turning point for me. That's when I really started believing in Jesus, and I've been studying in the Word, and I went home for Christmas, and I've talked to my father, and we've had great discussions. And so I'm just telling you that in spite of the news headlines that I deliver to you every day, that God is at work, not just in my family, but around the globe. He is at work. I worshiped with my son and the Vineyard, which is the church they attend in St. Andrews. Many of you know about the Vineyard. It started in the hippie generation. It really concentrates on music. I would say it's very faithful doctrinally, but it's also charismatic. And I heard, you know, I just experienced the most beautiful worship. I'm just saying, God is at work in this world. He is calling his people, whether it's Asha Bibi, who we won't get to today. She was released and is back in Canada. She's been under threat for her life for 10 years. I heard about a revival that's taking place in an army base in California, where thousands of men are coming to Christ. I hear of all these things that the God is at work. He is alive and he is at work. And I honestly think he's at work in the nation's capital too. Sometimes it's hard to find him there, but I know so many people that are dedicated. Their lives are churning and passionate. To speak the truth on these very difficult issues, laying it all out, laying it down on the line, pledging their lives and fortunes because they believe in truth and they believe in God. And so don't be discouraged as I now unwrap a lot of bad stuff today for you because God is at work in all of this. I think of, in fact, I'm going to turn my attention to one more story before we take our break because we're going to spend some time on this today. Last week on Tuesday, there was another school shooting. I'm sure you know that. It took place at STEM school, Highlands Ranch. This is probably old news to you, but you know, one student was killed and eight were injured. And I don't think we're going to have time to play the clip I was going to play, but I want to tell you this about the shooter, things that we know. The shooter, Devin Erickson, there were two of them, but Devin, 18, says, you know what, he posted this, you know what I hate? All these Christians who hate gays, yet in the Bible it says in Deuteronomy 17, if someone doesn't do what their priest tells them to do, they're supposed to die. It has plenty of crazy stuff like that, but all they get out of it is, you gays. The other suspect in the shooting, the other suspected shooter, was Maya McKinney, 16-year-old female who identifies as a transgender male and prefers to be called Alec. This is the part of the story that the mainstream media doesn't want to tell, and that's probably why all has gone quiet on this shooting. You notice mostly always out town hall meetings, they bring out the band and they attack the NRA, and they did try to do that in this case, but they failed miserably. We're going to get into that. This shooter, Kendrick, actually had things on his car. He said, like, you know what, I can't repeat that. Let's just say it had 666 on his car and other obscenities. These are troubled kids, product of our public schools, who hated Christians, loved Barack Obama, loved Occupy Wall Street, and other things like that. That may be why the media has gone so silent. But there are other reasons. We're going to talk about it when we return. Sandy Rios, happy to be back with you on AFR Talk.
A call to action from American Family Radio.
There's all kind of
difficulty in the world. But as the Word of God says, if your brother's in need and you have it within your ability to respond to their need, how can you claim to have love if you allow them to go without? What greater need is there than the need to live? I know life is rough, but it don't have nothing to do with the baby. Don't kill the baby. Don't wait for preborn campaigns. Don't wait for legislation to be passed in your state legislature. Don't wait till Roe versus Wade is overturned. Respond now. I believe with everything in me that we can end this scourge regardless of what they do in the halls of Congress and the halls of the state legislature. Every single family, every single church, go to the local abortion clinics. Let them know that you have people in your churches, people in your family that are willing to take the babies home. They have families that have been dying to take a child home. Don't kill the babies.
Visit AFR.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Byron Zeidema, Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Employment and Training Administration. This agency provides training, employment, and other services to Americans in the workforce or seeking work. Luke 6:38 reminds us of the importance of helping those in need. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to bless Byron Zeidema as he helps provide work-related services to Americans. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A Southern accent gets lost in translation. That story coming up.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A Boston radio host nearly sparked another war between the states after he hung up on a North Carolina sports writer for the Raleigh News and Observer.
But then the puck started going in a little bit more. And then in January, they traded for Nino Niederreiter.
I can't listen to a guy with a Southern accent talk about hockey.
Did you hang up on him?
Yep.
I thought he was pretty good.
Nope.
I thought he was all right. Yeah.
Nope.
Really?
It's on an accent. I can't take it.
Well, the Boston Bruins and the Carolina Panthers are battling in the playoffs. It's not the first time the Hurricanes have been ridiculed by Boston reporters. In 2009, the Boston Globe called the Carolina Hurricanes a bunch of goobers. The idea of someone from Boston criticizing anybody else's accent is rich, especially a Southern accent. The irony? It's thicker than a bowl of Boston chowder. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Students at this high school had invited people in the community to come and have a vigil. Students from STEM came here to be a part of that vigil. A lot of people hosted this and came here with certain intentions, but clearly things shifted throughout the night and it got pretty tough for a while. By the end of the night, though, this did once again become a vigil. So the people who came here tonight, they were students from Highlands Ranch who helped host this in addition to this organization. The organization was called Team Enough. These are students that we spoke to in advance of this. They describe themselves as an organization that works toward gun prevention. But we also heard from politicians here tonight who talked about gun control. We heard from other groups that also advocate for gun control. This started like a lot of other vigils do, unfortunately. But it started with people speaking, students. It started with people singing. And then that is when it turned to a different direction. We heard some of these politicians speaking. STEM students started yelling from the stands, "We want to speak. We want to be heard. We are here for a reason." And then they stormed out. They were very upset that they didn't have that opportunity. A lot of them stormed out in protest. They made it clear they wanted to be heard. And then they did come back in. Here's what they had to say next.
What has happened at STEM is awful, but it's not a statistic.
We can't be used for a reason for gun control. We are a people, not a statement.
We wanted Kendrick to be mourned. We wanted all of you to join us in that mourning, but that was not allowed here. We all walked out. We were not kicked out, despite what you have heard. And we're back now to tell you that we love Kendrick, and we love all of the survivors.
This is really important, but after the students came back in, after the STEM students had a chance to speak, this did become a vigil to honor Kendrick, to honor some of the students. Multiple students from multiple high schools were here tonight to share that. Many of them spoke to us afterward. They said that was the whole point of tonight. They got a chance to speak finally. They were grateful for that. Just a really tough night, Kyle and Kim. A lot of emotions. These poor kids have been through so much already.
Okay, Sandy Rios, back with you. Well, that's the story that I'm not sure you know. I haven't been in the States, so I don't know, but I don't think this was reported much. That's my impression. Because what happened was, as in all of these school shootings, the gun opponents jump in, start preaching against the NRA, organize the kids, turn the grieving process into a political rally, and the kids at this STEM school, School Highlands Ranch, it's a charter school, they were not having it. So when the politicians, including Senator Bennett and another local politician, Jason Crow, started in, the kids weren't having it. They started yelling. They said, this is not mental health. It's not about guns. Don't use Kendrick's name for political reasons. And they marched. They went out. And then they decided to organize and go back in. And they demanded, they said, we want Kendrick to be mourned. We wanted all of you to join us in that mourning. But that was not allowed. We all walked out. We were not kicked out. Despite of what you've heard, we're back now to tell you that we love Kendrick. We love all the survivors. And so they were refusing to have this situation be politicized. I've asked John Lott to join us this morning. John, of course, is the definitive expert on gun violence and, of course, on school shootings. And he's just released a report called Schools That Allow Teachers to Carry Guns Haven't Seen School Shootings During School Hours. And we're going to talk about that report with John. Thanks for joining us, John. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Before we get to your report, John, you always know so much about these shootings, and I'm catching up from being gone. What do we know about this kid that was killed, Kendrick Costello?
Well, I mean, we know that he was a hero, that we probably wish there were more kids like that in the country. I mean, I wouldn't advise somebody to go and rush unarmed killer there without having some type of protection. But this young man was willing to go and do that. And, you know, whether it's the woman who threw herself in front of the rabbi who's being shot at and losing her life for doing it, or young Kendrick, these are the types of things that make one want to cry when you hear about these things. That you know, these are exactly the type of people we wish we didn't have to lose. And, you know, but these have gone on too long. I wish people would go and do the types of things that would matter. Instead, we have gun control activists calling, you know, politicians calling within an hour of these attacks, even before we know what happened, calling for more gun control laws. And, you know, they call for things like background checks on private transfers that, you know, we had people calling for that immediately after this school shooting. And yet it wouldn't have stopped that school shooting, and it wouldn't have stopped any of the other mass public shootings this century. But yeah, they have a list of laws that they want to have imposed, and they use anything that happens in order to try to justify it.
Yeah, there's so many reasons. John Nolte has a great article on Breitbart. In fact, I want to put this on our Facebook page. It's titled Media Quickly Lost Interest in Politically Inconvenient School Shooting, because you have two transgender perpetrators of the crime. And then, of course, you have the fact that the by his own words, one of the shooters hated Christians, loved Barack Obama, hated Donald Trump. And it's just the wrong model altogether. And then, of course, you've got these kids standing up at this rally saying, we're not having it. We are not going to be used like this. So we're going to put that article on our Facebook page. John, before we get into your study, just tell me, were you, I think I know the answer to this, but you must have been really surprised yourself and refreshed to see how the students responded to what had become routine after these shootings, this political rally. What were your thoughts when you watched that unfold?
Well, it's not the only time something like that's happened. These usually, as you mentioned, don't get a lot of attention. I'll give you one example. Last year after the Parkland shooting, we had the CNN town hall where everybody was pretty much just asking pro-gun control questions of everything. And I had this kind of texting back and forth with Jake Tapper, who was the host of the town hall, and I was saying, you know, couldn't you find anybody for some balance there? And he said, well, you know, you have to understand, he said, this is liberal Broward County, and of course, everybody's going to be for gun control. A few months later, when there was the attack at the Santa Fe High School in Texas, you had students and parents and others coming out in favor of armed teachers after that. And I texted Jake at that time, and I said, so are you going to do another town hall after the Santa Fe shooting? And he just never would respond to my question on that. And it's just, you know, it's just interesting. I mean, they know how different people in different parts of the country respond. And you know, I'm still surprised that they couldn't find anybody to balance off after during the town hall that they had in Parkland. But, you know, people have to provide their questions beforehand, and so they know what questions people are going to be asking, and the ones that they pick.
Oh, they would not stack the questions. We know they CNN never stacks the questions in these town halls. Just ask Donna Brazile. Anyway, we know they do that, John, and this is a deadly thing. This is not just political. This is deadly because the consequences are deadly.
Right.
And you know, interestingly, I just want to say I was just, as you know, I was just in Scotland with my son, and we got into a discussion. Scotland is probably, to me, of my countries I've traveled in, the most vehemently anti-gun of any country. The people just hate it. They think that we are crazy. And they see these school shootings, and they say, why doesn't America just, why don't they do gun laws? Why don't they control this, stop the guns? Because that's what we do, and we don't have shootings. And it's... So, John, that's where I needed you. I actually invoked your name more than once. But you've just done a study on this. So tell us what you have found about what's happening. What's the pattern?
There's another study that we did that maybe is relevant to the Scotland discussion, and that is we looked at mass public shootings around the world. We looked at from 1998 through 2015. And what we found is that the United States makes about 4.6% of the world's population, but we have about 1% of the mass public shooters in the world. And there are many countries in Europe, France, Russia, Norway, Finland, other countries that have murder rates for mass public shootings that are much higher than we have in the United States. France, which bans semi-automatic guns, had more casualties from mass public shootings in 2015, just 1 year, than the United States had during the entire 8 years of the Obama presidency. And so, you know, and outside of Europe, the attacks are really frequent and massive. And so, you know, the notion that somehow gun control laws are going to protect you from these things is just not serious.
England, it's
had a low rate of mass public shootings well before they had their gun laws. They had low rates of murder well before they had their strict gun control laws. In fact, their murder rates actually went up after they imposed their strict gun control laws.
Yeah. John, before I don't want us to run out of time, so let's jump to your survey, because I think the question that people ask, rightly, whether it's international or here, how can you allow teachers to carry guns? Kids are going to get these guns, or they're going to be handled carelessly. It's going to be disaster. You have documented now what's happened so far. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, we looked at all the school shootings of any type, from an accidental discharge all the way up to a mass public shooting, for all the schools in the United States from 2000 through 2018. There's over 1,000 school districts that have teachers that carry guns. And what we found is that despite all that experience, there hasn't been a shooting where anybody's been injured in any way or killed during anything close to school hours where teachers would be around with guns during any of those years. That there's been an increase in deaths from school shootings over time, but that's entirely been driven by attacks at schools that don't allow teachers to carry. So there are two issues here. One is, are there the types of concerns, the problems that you raise as possibilities, do they happen? Do students get a hold of a teacher's gun? Does a teacher accidentally shoot somebody? And the answers to those are definitely no. And then there's the issue of, might there be deterrence? Rather than having a sign in front of a school that says this school is a gun-free zone, if you had a sign that said something like, selected teachers at this school are armed and will use their guns to protect the students and themselves if necessary, does that deter? And what you find is that there's no attacks of any type that has occurred during school hours. You have nobody going in trying to kill other people at a school or wound them, whether it be, one shot fired or a mass public shooting. And so at least provide some evidence that there may be a deterrent there. And it's not rocket science, but the fact that criminals, these mass public shooters who want to go to places where they can kill or wound lots of people so they can get more attention, understand that if there's somebody there, somebody that they can't identify before they do the attack who might be able to stop them, that deters them. That, guards, people, police officers are important for stopping crime, but they have a very difficult job when it comes to stopping these types of mass public shootings. Because if you have somebody in uniform and everybody knows they're the only person with a gun, these terrorists have an incentive to kill them first. Because once they kill those individuals, then they have free reign. Or they can attack when they don't see the person around, or they can pick another target. But, police officers have an almost impossible job. In fact, having a concealed carry permit holder makes it safer for the officers, because if the killer tries to take out the officer, they reveal their position. And they have to worry that somebody behind them or to the side, somebody that they don't know whether they're armed or not, might be able to go and stop them once they reveal their position.
And the good thing is, John, is that you have identified, I think, 20 states that allow teachers or staff to carry, and you have some really great stats now. I mean, it hasn't just been recent. A lot of these states, as I understand it, have been allowing teachers and staff to arm themselves for a long time. So the research is pretty extensive for this point. And I want to just say that this study, which is really fascinating, is available at crimeresearch.org. That's crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. Just a word, John, about, I'm sure the reason's obvious, but how do you think the media is going to continue their coverage of this? They're going to have to say something about it, aren't they? About as these kids go to trial, or how do you think they're going to handle this?
About the students walking out and their
views. And just the story itself.
I think they're going to handle it the same way they handled the Santa Fe students' views. They're just going to ignore it. I mean, that's unfortunately what, if it doesn't fit their template, it's something that they don't view as appropriate to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. Well, this is a stunning story, and these kids, they just give me hope, honestly. The way the STEM students responded to what happened, they were smarter than that. And it's an amazing story. By the way, we'll put the Washington Free Beacon story on our Facebook page. Also, Colorado students walk out after politicians hijack STEM vigil to push gun control. And Dr. John Lott, it's Crime Research Center, but it's crimeresearch.org. And so it's a great resource for all the things you're talking about in regard to carrying a gun and the NRA and all of that. Dr. John Lott, thank you, as always, for joining me this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great talking to you. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you. All right, Sandy Rios, and another story that happened in Congress on Thursday, I guess it was. An imam prayed in Congress, and he has a very interesting past. We'll talk about it next. Sandy Rios, in the morning.
Evil men and seducers will go on from bad to worse. deceiving, and being deceived. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Democrats have demanded to see a completely unredacted version of the Mueller report. What many are unaware of, however, is that Dems have refused to review a 99.9% redaction-free version AG Barr made available to them, where only grand jury information is concealed. All that remains redacted, according to National Review, is two full lines and four partial lines, two of which are in footnotes. This shows Democrats in Congress don't really want to see an unredacted Mueller report. They simply want to be able to argue about seeing an unredacted Mueller report.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Love sings.
You know, ignorance is not bliss. We must know our enemy's strategies.
Like a good song, marriage requires the right balance of melody, harmony, and rhythm. Longtime friends of the American Family Association, Barbie and Terry Franklin, share stories and music in their new DVD set, Love Sings, The Artistry of Marriage.
It'll change your marriage like this.
Produced by American Family Studios, Love Sings is now available at afastore.net.
There's a lot happening around us. That's why Christians need to stand strong on family values and morality. Hi, I'm Ray Rooney, editor of The Stand, a blog from the American Family Association. The Stand has timely, carefully written articles on relevant cultural issues that you can quickly forward to others. The Stand is a beacon of light to a society in need of direction. Visit afa.net/thestand.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Some ill-informed Americans believe the Second Amendment exists only to protect the right of colonial militias to be armed. But here's the actual wording. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It's not the right of the militias to keep and bear arms, but the right of the people. Who are the people? Well, that's you and me. Ordinary Americans who are looking to protect ourselves and our families. Founding era Supreme Court Justice Joseph Story, in his commentaries on the Constitution, put it this way: the right of the citizens to keep and bear arms has justly been considered as the palladium of the liberties of a republic. I don't find the right of the people hard to understand at all, do you?
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Pacific Gas and Electric has acknowledged that its wind whip power lines last year caused the Camp Fire, the deadliest in California's history. Taken together with other recent wildfires, the utility has incurred some $30 billion in claims, prompting it to declare bankruptcy. In the hope of avoiding further losses this summer, the company has just announced that if similar conditions arise, it will turn off the power, rather than risk sparking another disastrous conflagration. The trouble is that the ensuing, possibly protracted blackout would likely put at risk millions of Americans, many of them perhaps mortally so, due to a lack of water, food, medication, transportation, and communications for days, if not weeks, on end. President Trump has called for the nation's electric grid to be protected against these and other dangers. There can be no higher priority. This is Frank Gaffney. Learn more at securethegrid.com.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We pray for peace, not war. Love, not hate. Benevolence, not greed. Unity, not division. And we commit ourselves to not betraying our prayers with actions that contradict them.
Democrats inviting to the House floor a Muslim imam with a long history of anti-Israel remarks to give an opening prayer. Omar Suleiman has compared one of our closest allies to terrorists. And in a 2014 Facebook post, demanded another antifada or uprising against Israel. Here with growing outrage is Congressman Lee Zeldin of New York, one of the two Jewish Republicans in Congress. Lee, thanks for being here. The prayer itself was innocuous. I watched it, but he talked about your words being in line with your deeds or your actions. There's a breakdown here.
Yeah, there's either the speaker's office did not vet this imam at all,
Or worse, they did vet the imam and then decided that it would have been okay for the imam to come onto the floor of the House of Representatives anyway. Let's just say all you found was that he compares Israel to Nazis. That would be enough to maybe tell that member or other members of the caucus, how about you find another imam if you want to have an imam give an opening prayer? But you know, as you pointed out, comparing Israel to terrorists, calling for and inciting violence, calling for a third Palestinian intifada, or the posts on social media that are supportive of Muslim Brotherhood, as that list goes further on, it's a bad call to have this person. It's horrible judgment. And after the 2019 that we've had so far,
yeah,
where their members of their own caucus are pushing anti-Semitism and anti-Israel hate, it was a bad judgment.
Yeah, bad judgment seems kind of kind to me, a kind description. What is happening in America's Congress when an imam that has the record that Omar Suleiman has is invited to pray? Frank Gaffney is our guest this morning. You know Frank's voice, you know his name, because he is heard every single morning in the Secure Freedom Minute that you heard a few minutes ago. He is just an absolute valuable, invaluable resource to this show. He also hosts his own show every night at 10 o'clock Central Standard Time, Secure Freedom Radio, on this network. And Secure Freedom Radio, by the way, you have to listen. You know, if you just check the podcast, if that's too late for you, you should listen to that, because Frank has the nation's leading experts on national security. And we are so blessed to have him on the network. And if I keep talking, he won't have a chance to talk about this. But Frank, thanks for joining me this morning.
It's my pleasure, Sandy, as always.
Hey, all right. I know that Congressman Zeldin told us a little bit, but flesh this thing out for us. Who is Omar Suleiman? Who is Imam Omar Suleiman anyway?
Sandy, he is, I think, in short, a Muslim Brotherhood-affiliated Sharia supremacist imam, that is to say, clerical leader in the Muslim faith, who has a record of extremist views, I think it's fair to say, certainly towards Israel and towards Jews more generally. The really worrying thing is that, unfortunately, they're not just his views, or they're not simply extreme views. They are very much part and parcel of what Sharia dictates to its adherents about Jews, about their, you know, treatment, about the status that Jews should have in, you know, society, which is to say, if they're tolerated at all, they are meant to be dhimmis, that is to say, second-class citizens or even enslaved people, you might call them. I mean, this is a tradition that obviously, unfortunately, not all Muslims embrace, but it is, according to the authorities of the faith, the true faith, the faith that is, in fact, now being promoted, as we have seen, all over the world, to the great detriment, not just of Jews, and for that matter, Christians, or homosexuals, or women, or artists, but all of the above. And really, fundamentally, it is at odds with our Constitution, the freedoms it guarantees, our form of government, and in short, the nation we love. That's what makes, as Congressman Zeldin pointed out, what happened here last week with this man being invited to speak, to lead the House of Representatives in prayer, so troubling. Did not the Speaker's office or the leadership of the House of Representatives, now Democratic controlled, of course, vet this fellow? Or did they vet him? Did they know what he believed? And were they good with it? That is the pregnant question that it seems to me has to be addressed immediately.
Yes, I think so, too. It's actually pretty frightening. And to be the details of this, Omar Suleiman is from Irving, Texas. And he was invited to speak by, did he just pray or did he speak also?
No, I believe he just prayed.
Okay. So he was invited by Representative Eddie Bernice Johnson, also of Texas, Democrat from Texas. But Frank, I seem to recall that there are chaplains in both houses of Congress. There's a Senate chaplain and a House chaplain. I don't understand. Maybe you don't either, because neither of us serve in Congress. But do they have random people come and pray in Congress? I thought it was the chaplain who did that.
Well, the chaplain is, of course, the default prayer, but there are others invited regularly, and that's what happened in this case. It was unclear to me, and I'm glad to have your guidance on this, Sandy, who invited him. I had to believe that it was somebody like Ilhan Omar or Rashida Tlaib, and I would be frankly surprised if they didn't have something to do with this, but either way, this is the kind of individual who is not being properly assessed by our government more generally, because it is the case that these Muslim Brotherhood types, these Sharia supremacist types, have great access to our government. Not, I think, probably quite as much as during the Obama years, but still altogether too much. And why I have to say, Sandy, I'm extremely excited about reports that President Trump is now thinking about doing something that he promised to do, intended to do, I think, early in his presidency, namely designating the Muslim Brotherhood as the foreign terrorist organization that it is. And if that actually were to happen, which the president can do, or the Secretary of State, for that matter, can do on their own authority, I think it would begin to inoculate us against these brothers whose mission, lest we forget, Sandy, as was laid out in a document introduced into evidence in the largest terrorism financing trial in U.S. history, the Holy Land Foundation trial back in 2008, their mission in America is, quote, destroying Western civilization from within by basically our hands, as well as the hands of the believers, that is to say, adherents to Sharia and Islam, until Allah's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Now, that's a very troubling agenda, don't you think?
Oh, yes, I'd say so. And actually, Frank, of course, you and I have discussed this so many times, and you have really, I think, almost single-handedly carried the burden of that message when you were really, really swimming upstream during the Bush administration. And I need to say again publicly, that's when you and I got acquainted and you were trying to alert and warn conservatives about the dangers. And you paid a great price for that and still have, actually, because it's a very unpopular viewpoint, although I think many more are being won to our side on this. I don't know if you would agree with that. Do you agree that more of our more people are becoming a little bit more less willing to embrace the Muslim Brotherhood than they once were, say, during the Bush administration?
Oh, I think clearly so. And as to whether this is unpopular, I don't think that's the case so much, Sandy, as I think it's the case that people are frightened about saying what needs to be said on this, raising an alarm about it, expressing concern about it. And that's simply because this Brotherhood sort of influence operation that has been greatly supported and enabled by groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center is such that they have essentially tried to irradiate anybody who raises concerns along these lines, that they're bigoted and they're racist and they're haters and they're Islamophobes and the like. I've been called all of those things, by the way. Mm-hmm. You may have too, for that matter.
Yes,
the truth
I have,
of the
yes.
matter is, we're simply talking about a real and present threat. In fact, I would argue an existential threat to our republic.
You know, Frank, I had an interesting experience. I've mentioned several times during the show today that I was just in Scotland. You know that too. I got into an interesting conversation over dinner with someone in Scotland. Let's just say he used to be a policeman in London. And the subject of Islam came up. I don't even remember the context. And man, I did not remember or realize how propagandized people are. It used to be that way in our country. I don't think so much anymore. I think people are more willing to listen. But I got lashed out at yet once again, and it really surprised me, the ignorance, really, really, the foothold of the Muslim Brotherhood propaganda. It was just extraordinary by someone who should know who should have more awareness and have heard other things. We need Scotland needs a Frank Gaffney. But anyway, let's come back to this country because, Frank, we've got growing tensions in the House that are just inexplicable. You've got Rashida Tlaib, who just said, a few days ago that she, what did she say? She said, I get a calm feeling when I think of the Holocaust. I get a calm feeling. And so people are pushing back on that statement, that wicked statement. We also have Ilhan Omar, which we've talked about extensively. And the Democratic leadership is allowing this, Frank. I mean, it's hard to believe that they were so naive about Omar Suleiman. I don't believe they were. How could they be? And why would they care? They're allowing, you know, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar to spew their venom. So how is this going to end? I mean, seriously, how in the world can these two factions, the freedom-loving Americans and the support of the Jewish nation, coexist with these few who hate the Jews and Zionism and freedom?
Well, Sandy, there's two things going on here. One is you have in this gal, this representative of the people of Minnesota, again, a Sharia supremacist, among other things. You can tell that because, as Judge Jeanine pointed out, she is wearing a hijab. That is the head covering that the Sharia traditions of Islam require adherence, female adherence, to wear, to be modestly dressed and so on.
Frank, we're losing you. We're losing the feed here.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, better. Thank you.
The point is that she is a very aggressive promoter of this Sharia program, and she is using every opportunity afforded her to sort of further stretch the envelope of things that are outrageous and, to some extent, I would argue, even un-American, to sort of demonstrate her chops as, a leader of the Sharia program in the United States. And the very aggressiveness of it is having the second effect, which is intimidating the congressional leadership. We saw this very explicitly, of course, when they initially trotted out a resolution that would have condemned her, not by name, but at least condemned the anti-Semitism that she has been expressing. And then they were scared out of doing so by the blowback from the left in their caucus, and the hard left in their caucus. And so she's not only stretching the envelope, but she's getting away with it. And mm-hmm. I think this is further, radicalizing, if you will, the Democratic caucus in the House. And I think where it ends, to answer your question, is either she will be repudiated by the voters or by her own colleagues, or she will continue to call the tune to which they're going to march. And I think the American people more generally are going to repudiate this. I certainly pray they will.
Yes, me too. Me too, Frank. Well, listen, thank you so much. And let me just say that you can hear Frank, of course, every morning on this show at 8:40 Eastern Standard Time. But you can also hear him in an extended format in the evening at 10 o'clock Central Standard Time, Secure Freedom Radio. And honestly, I cannot say enough about the need for you to listen to his podcast. You will learn so much. You will be so informed and ready on all of these national security issues. It's invaluable information. Frank Gaffney, Center for Security Policy. Frank, thanks so much for joining us this morning, and talk to you soon.
My pleasure, Sandy. Thank you.
All right. Okay, Sandy Rios, happy to be back. And tomorrow we'll have a discussion about what else is going on in the world. You know we will. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.